I'm speaking with Bill Selbig. He is the hydrologist for the Wisconsin Water Science Center as part of the U.S. Geological Survey. And Bill, welcome to World Sweeper. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger.
Bill was an integral part of the recent Wisconsin study that it actually went, the data-wise, went from 2002 through 2006. This is early 2008. The results are released and, as a part of this audio interview, are linked. So, Bill, if you would, thanks again for consenting to talk to us about the process that you went through, and please tell our listeners what the problem is in Wisconsin and what you're trying to accomplish by having this sweeping test.
Sure. Thanks for the invitation, Ranger. It's probably best to start out by just giving a little bit of background about why this study came about in the first place. And the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has a series of stormwater performance standards in place. And those performance standards really try to attempt to mitigate both water quantity and water quality impacts that are, you know, typically associated with stormwater, and in urban stormwater in particular. Now, the performance standards for these established urban areas, and we're not talking retrofits here or new construction type area urban areas, but for the established urban areas, they're going to require these qualifying cities, which are some 200 or so in the state of Wisconsin, and the city of Madison is one of those. But they require these qualifying cities that to reduce total suspended solids by 20%, which is in effect this year, 2008, and then up to 40% by the year 2013. So, you know, the city of Madison, along with these other 200 or so cities, have to fulfill that performance standard, which is also under the guise of the EPA's NPDES Phase 2 rules. That, one of the ways they wanted to try approach this is rather than go out and spend a lot of money by purchasing new proprietary BMPs, trying to find available land to install these various BMPs, it can be quite costly to do that, and perhaps the land isn't even available. So one of the alternatives was to just take a look at existing programs. One of those existing programs, of course, is street sweeping. And that's where this study came along, is to see, can street sweeping really be a tool that the city of Madison can use to achieve the performance standard that the state has set forth? And really, they can probably do that by just modifying the existing program they have. And by modifying, I mean by changing the frequency or perhaps the technology of the street sweeper they're currently using. So that's where we came in. That's the state and the city and the USGS all came together and sat at a table and devised a monitoring program to try and evaluate various street sweeping technologies. We wanted to take a look at the mechanical broom, which is probably what most people are familiar with, and that's sort of the standard in street sweepers today. But then we also wanted to take a look at some of the other technologies that are out there, in particular the regenerative air sweeper. And then a little bit later, we brought in a vacuum-assisted sweeper, and all of them were sponsored by Elgin Corporation, and we evaluated them over a period of about 4 years, where we started out taking a look at a calibration period, what we call a calibration period, which was essentially no sweeping at all. So for 2 years, there was no sweeping in our basins, our study basins. Then after that two-year period, our street sweepers were deployed on a frequency of once per week in two of our basins, and then a frequency of once per month in a third basin. And we did that for about 2 years. And then after that, we switched back to a no-sweeping period again. And the whole idea is to just try to take a look at how are our study basins changing in terms of both street dirt loads, the physical amount of street dirt that we can pick up and measure, and as well as water quality changes. What type of changes are we seeing in the street, and how does that translate into changes at the end of the pipe in the storm sewer? And then all of that that data was summarized, and we took a look at which street sweeping technology had the most impact, and provided that data to the state of Wisconsin and the city of Madison so that the environmental managers on those both their end can make the necessary policy changes to meet those goals.
When one looks at the report, which we have online, linked to the USGS website, they'll be able to see what you did. Would it make more sense for us to discuss briefly what you might do differently if you were doing it again, or are you comfortable with the protocol in retrospect? There's nothing quite like the 2020 of hindsight, I know. And
yeah. No, interesting question. And yeah, it is easy to look back in time and say, gosh, I wish I would have done that. I will say that I think the study design was fairly well constructed in terms of how we went about collecting our street dirt data. And we didn't come up with it on our own. These were methods that have been used in the past by Dr. Pitt out of University of Alabama in prior street sweeping studies. These are very well-documented methods, and we adopted those methods, and over the course of the four-year study, we did various tests to try to make sure we were on track and adequately representing the physical amount of street dirt on each of the streets in our study basin, and we did a very good job of doing that. So in terms of the street dirt yields and loads we measured on the street surface itself, I think we nailed that one down. We did a pretty good job that way. What on the other end of things is where it gets a little bit more difficult to have a lot of confidence in the data that we're looking at. And in fact, I go into this in a little bit more detail in the report. When we're measuring water quality loads, we're basically taking a sample of water in a storm sewer at a fixed point, and we'll of course do this through a flow weighted composite sampling. So whenever there's a rainstorm, water will rush down in the storm sewer, and over the course of that rainstorm, we'll periodically take samples based upon the amount of flow in the pipe, and that will give us what we call an event mean concentration. So for every storm, we have one concentration of various constituents, whether it be total suspended solids or phosphorus, or et cetera. What was interesting is over the course of this study, we realized that there are certain issues with the way we go about collecting our samples. It's sort of a three-pronged process. We collect the sample, we'll bring it back to our laboratories and process it. And by processing, I mean we split our whole water sample down into smaller fractions that we can then deliver to the laboratory for analysis. And then the third prong then is, of course, the laboratory analysis and how they handle the sample. And one of the unique things of this study, I think, is along the way we kind of discovered there are ways that we can improve our process. And this is also discussed in the report. One of those is the way we split that whole water sample down. There's been some documented studies showing that there are some inefficiencies with the way we take a whole water sample, and typically we'll put it into a churn splitter, which is a large cylindrical vessel that has a paddle and keeps things well mixed, and then you proportion your water off into smaller laboratory bottles. If you have large particles present in that sample, they'll tend to bias themselves and concentrate down near the valve or the spigot of this vessel. And so realizing this, we devised new methods. About halfway through the study, we came up with new methods to correct that bias. And in addition to that, once that sample is delivered to the laboratory, some of the same biases we found in the way we process our sample were also present in the way the laboratory does the physical analysis. And this is particularly true for solids and sediment, but also true for metals. And so we worked with our laboratory to come up with new methods to help fix those biases as well. So overall, I think we had a better product by the end of our study. One of the biggest challenges was not only the way we do our sampling routines, but also going back to this 2020 hindsight idea, it was taking a look at our study basins themselves. These were approximately 50, 60 acre single-family residential study basins, small basins. And yet we're trying to determine if street sweeping has an impact on the water quality when streets are really only a portion of those basins. There are other inputs to what we actually measure at the end of the pipe, some of those being driveways or lawns or rooftops or other source areas that contribute sediment and other sources of pollution.
Sure.
So a storm will come by and a lot of rain will fall on the entire basin, and what we measure at the end of the pipe is what we were thinking was only on the streets, when the reality is that's probably not true. So we have a lot of sources of variability for each storm that added a lot of noise to our data points and made it very difficult for us to make any conclusions about the effectiveness of street sweeping in terms of water quality.
I've been surprised that it's taken so long for water quality managers in NPDES cities to recognize that parking area sweeping should be included as a component of the street sweeping problem, because the way that parking, obviously, or maybe not so obviously, to the uninformed, water's going to hit the paved areas of malls and shopping centers and all the business community, and that there'll be a certain amount of runoff that ends up in the streets from that, and yet there's really no regulation on the parking area sweeping side of things. So,
That's absolutely right, and it may be different for different cities. It may be more of a percent area of streets versus parking lots. Maybe one is more than the other issue, but you're right. Parking lots certainly are part of the equation, and in fact, we have a study going on right now where we're trying to determine what, in fact, is the average particle size distribution of runoff, of sediment in runoff for parking lots. And the data that we collect from this study will help us make some hydrologic models a little bit more robust when it comes to helping predict what street sweeping could possibly do for parking lots on water quality.
And of course, it's even more difficult in a residentially populated basin, because there's less you can do about personal driveways and personal lawn care and those kinds of things.
That's right. Yeah.
What else should we talk about here with the study?
Well, maybe one of the things worthwhile is to maybe discuss the various technologies and how they performed against each other.
And again, this is an Elgin Whirlwind, an Elgin Crosswind, and an Elgin Pelican are three machines. Okay.
Yeah, right. The Pelican is the Elgin's version of the mechanical broom, and then the Crosswind is the regenerative air sweeper. The Whirlwind is what we are calling a vacuum-assisted sweeper. And I'll try to set up the stage of how we evaluated each of these. The Pelican was tested in two different basins. Only one of those basins had a water quality component to it. And in that basin, it was operated at a frequency of once per week. Now, a second basin, we tested an Elgin Pelican as well, but that was operated at a frequency of once per month. And there was no water quality component to that. We just wanted to see how much street dirt is this sweeper capable of removing over the period of. We measured it every week, but the sweeper only went every month. And the bottom line was it really just didn't make much of a difference at all at that frequency. The two other sweepers we evaluated were the regenerative air, also operating at a frequency of once per week, which was the Crosswind, and the Whirlwind, or the vacuum assist, was also operated at a frequency of once per week. Each of those were in their own basin. Those were in the same basin. We started out with the Crosswind, and then halfway through we pulled that one and deployed the Whirlwind in that same basin. But there was a water quality component to that. And both of those the water quality basins, the regenerative air and Whirlwind, vacuum assist sweeper, and the Pelican operating at a frequency of once per week, were compared against a control, which had no sweeping at all.
Okay.
Now, we're just focusing on their street dirt removal ability. The technologies were very similar. Hold on, Ranger, I'm going to have to stop that one. I got confused in there, so I'm going to provide you a pause. Okay. The whirlwind and the crosswind had similar pickup efficiencies, approximately 25 to 30%, whereas the Pelican, operating at frequency of once per week, really was only able to pick up about 5% of the street available street dirt. And our pickup efficiency was measured by us going out and sampling the amount of dirt on the street before the sweeper went through, and then doing it again after the sweeper went through. And I thought that was kind of interesting, that the pickup efficiencies really for the regenerative air and a vacuum assist sweeper were very similar to one another, even though they use different technologies. And compared to the mechanical broom, they were, the mechanical broom had considerably less pickup efficiency than the other two.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I think that was interesting was taking a look at the particle size distribution of the street dirt for each sweeper. And if you break it down by particle size, for the Pelican sweeper, it would actually increase the amount of particles that were smaller than about 125 microns. And the regenerative air sweeper, and this is on average now, would increase the particles that were smaller than approximately, the Pelican increased particles that were smaller than 250 microns, and the crosswind, which is regenerative air, would increase particles that were smaller than 125.
I wouldn't expect the latter to occur. I would expect that the broom sweeper would make smaller particles out of the 250 micron range.
That's right. It increased the amount of smaller particles.
All right.
And
would you hypothesize that as being from the curb broom action that didn't get then picked up, or that got entrained into the air and then fell back down? Or any hypothesis that goes along with that?
Well, yeah, in a lot of previous studies have also said the same thing, that the physical action of the mechanical broom sweeper will actually break larger particles down into smaller ones.
Right. Now, I expect that, but why for the regenerative air? Why would they? I'm surprised that they didn't pick up the smaller ones. There's some action there that this implies that took 125 micron particles, and instead of picking them up and keeping them, put them out where, you know, they were still left on the road.
And I think what it comes down to is that if you take a look at with the first 3 foot distance from the curb towards the center of the road, that the technology used between the mechanical broom and regenerative air is essentially the same. It's a wire bristle broom that extends into the curb and pushes the material in towards the center transfer broom.
Right.
On a mechanical broom, it's just another broom that picks that material and throws it into a hopper. In a regenerative air, it's a blast of air that sucks it up into the hopper.
But only if the gutter broom kicks it in front of the sweeping head.
That's right. And so you're basically just pushing material. You're still breaking larger particles down into smaller ones, and you're relying on that wire bristle broom to push material into the center. It isn't until you use the vacuum assist, where you have a strong, powerful vacuum that overlaps with that wire bristle broom, that you see a difference. In fact, we had reductions across the board for all particle sizes for the vacuum assist sweeper. And so I thought that was rather unique. And I think the reason is obvious, is that you have the presence of this powerful vacuum that can suck up all of the particles that wire bristle broom gets out of the curb and pushes towards the center transfer broom.
And since we know that the majority of bad components that are in street dirt tend to be in the smaller micron particles, then that's a significant factor.
Right, that tends to be the consensus, just due to increased surface area, some of the pollutants associated with that bond onto the smaller particle are more easily transferred and carried by wash off into a storm sewer. So, yeah, the idea is to kind of try and get those, and if you can get those smaller particles, then hopefully you would see an improvement in water quality concentrations.
Very good. Is there anything further that we should talk about, or does that provide a wrap-up?
Well, that the study itself was, in my opinion, I think was well-rounded and did a really good job of taking a look at various technologies that are being employed today. And the interesting thing is, again, if we're taking a look at street door yields, I think street sweepers are obviously doing a decent job. They're obviously picking up material. The question now becomes, what does that mean in terms of water quality? And that's what this study attempted to answer. I think there's still a lot more work that needs to be done on the researchers' end of things, on how to isolate where these sources of variability are coming from and try to correct them and try to improve upon the noise we see in our data in an attempt to get data that really can help these environmental managers make the decisions they need to make.
The other part that I'd like to see is that we're looking at, let's say, 30% pickup efficiency by the regenerative air and the vacuum assist sweepers. You might say, well, gee, that's too small. How does that matter? Well, the question that would come up is, what is the comparison in cost per pound of material? Because that material is going to wash off into the storm sewers if we don't pick it up by sweeping. So there are, of course, some slip and fall factors and safety factors that driving factors that enter into it as well. But what is the comparison of cost if you were to try to take that same amount of material and take it out of the end of the pipe, and how can we use that kind of data to then decide what the street sweeping frequency should be with a given machine?
Yeah, that's a good point. Definitely there's a place for street sweeping, and it will always be used by the city of Madison just simply for aesthetic reasons, if anything. But in terms of cost-benefit and dollars saved, that is an answer that I would have to divert to our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources.
Well, and I hope that could occur, because it seems like that's the next natural outgrowth of that is how do we take information like this and then decide what the sweeping frequency should be so that we can have an overall best dollar number for getting the kind of results at the end of the pipe that you're after in terms of TSS reduction.
Sure, exactly. And those are the kinds of decisions that both the city of Madison and other communities are going to have to wrestle with themselves. It's the cost of pounds per curb miles they remove by street sweeping, and you compare that against the cost of the technology that they're going to use to do that. Certainly, the Whirlwind and some of the more improved technologies are going to be more costly, upfront capital costs and maybe some long-term maintenance costs. But then you have to weigh that against possibly buying a half-acre parcel of land in an urbanized area and retrofitting that area for some other proprietary BMP. And these are all come with a price tag, and those are the difficult decisions that they're going to have to make to ultimately try to achieve those performance standards set forth by the state.
Right, and we know that at least the analysis of the California data showed that street sweeping per cost per pound of pollutant picked up appeared to be about $10 a pound, not just for total gross material, but for a pound of pollutant. Mm-hmm. And the analysis of what it costs for those types of retrofit, whether it's a settling pond or whatever it is, looked to be in the range of $35 a pound without even including the cost of the real estate. So mm-hmm. those are the kinds of things, as you say, that the stormwater managers need to come up with those kinds of analysis tools and then make their decisions on an overall basis rather than having one group of people make the decision about how much sweeping and somebody else make the decision about how do we get the TSS to be removed at the end of the pipe.
That's right.
Put them together. Well, I sure appreciate your time. And
you're welcome.
Again, we have been speaking with Bill Selbig. And Bill is the hydrologist for the Wisconsin Water Science Center, part of the U.S. Geological Survey. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks for having me.